Support for today's show comes from Deloitte. What does the future look like? By melding business acumen and innovative technology, Deloitte can help you build the future only you can imagine. They can help engineer solutions for your business reality today and your vision for tomorrow, to get you to a world where you don't just dream it, you build it. See how you can engineer advantage with Deloitte at deloitte.com/us/engineeringadvantage.
Support for Pivot comes from Pendo. Pendo improves the apps your customers and employees rely on. Whether you're building applications for customers or managing applications for employees, Pendo can help deliver better experiences for your users so they can get more value from your software. Visit pendo.io/pivot to learn more about how your team can use Pendo to start building better digital experiences. There you can also check out Pendo's lineup of free certification courses, 12 hours of in-depth training for your product management teams on topics from AI to product analytics to product-led growth. That's pendo.io/pivot to learn more.
Hi, everyone. This is Pivot from the Vox Media Podcast Network. I'm Kara Swisher.
And I'm Scott Galloway. You are feeling better, Kara.
Better, but not best, I have to say. Yeah. It's cold. Is this whatever it is? It's either rhinovirus. We're going to talk about coronavirus. It's much more serious later. But it's bad. You get a fever, and then you get a cold, and you get a sore throat, and then you cough like you're dying of consumption. So it goes on, I have to say. And you don't smell anything, which is not good in some cases and bad in others. So it's still here with me after all this time.
So isn't that sort of part and parcel of just having kids? Is just everyone is sick all the time?
No kids. No kid thing because I wasn't around them. It just, you can touch anything. Like you touch a glass or a counter. This thing apparently lives on everything. Wash your hands. That's all I got to say. Everybody wash your hands and wear a mask. Because this is one that is not in the list of stuff with flu shots or anything else. And it lasts forever. It's really, I've never had a cold like this. Anyway, let's move on. Actually, there's some really, it's not the best week this week, as many weeks are. But tragically, basketball legend Kobe Bryant was killed in a helicopter crash. His 13-year-old daughter, who is also a very promising basketball player, was also killed in the crash. I think people were shocked yesterday when the news broke, and there's all kinds of stuff that went back and forth on Twitter. They had names that were not, and they thought all his daughters were with him. They thought other people were there. I'm not even going to repeat the people they thought were there who had to get on Twitter and say, I'm not dead, essentially. But just a terrible, they were flying in bad weather. I think that's what it looks like in conditions other people wouldn't fly in. This is just one of these things that's,
there's not a lot to take away from this other than sadness. I think there were two other kids. I think there were three kids on the flight, this is just a tragedy of, on all sorts of levels. I think they'll talk a lot about, I don't know if it was a single pilot, helicopters are generally seen as more dangerous. I think a lot of people, wealthy people, similar in Sao Paulo and Los Angeles, had taken to the skies because the traffic has become so bad. And then at what point do pilots have... what are your limits in terms of when you'll fly and when you won't? So, for example, it came out today that the LAPD had grounded all their helicopters because of the weather. Yeah. And I also think it's interesting, a couple things that I noticed as it was unfolding. One, TMZ came out before supposedly the Bryant family had been notified. The issue is, does media have some sort of responsibility on issues like these to coordinate with authorities such that we can give families the grace of finding out from the authorities and not hearing about it on Twitter?
Well, obviously, I think so. But it's just, Harvey Levin's been sort of pioneering this kind of instant firsts. I can't imagine there was even a question of in that office of let's get it up. Unfortunately, I would have not made that call. But, it's the atmosphere now of this twitchy immediate thing. But you're right. In any case, it's incredible tragedy. We're going to talk about more later. But, of course, Bryant, as many reports noted today, was not without controversy. He was he had an alleged sexual assault in 2003 that got an enormous amount of attention that later he apologized for and was settled out of court. But there's all kinds of things. But he had been doing a ton around kids and playing basketball and was taking his daughter to a a team meet, a travel team with the other kids that he had created this center where kids play up in the area he was flying to. He had been well known for using a helicopter to get around from his house. He lived down south.
So I got back and forth from games, and the other observation was, it feels as if his legacy will be a lot about his daughters and what a family man he was. He was married, I think, at the age of 22, and.
Yep. Four kids.
Unlike a lot of athletes, stayed married. I think he was married for 19 years, four daughters. People have been speaking a lot about that. And also in our society, I mean, he will go down. He was going to go down as an iconic figure regardless. But
absolutely.
There's definitely, in terms of, cementing yourself as an icon, dying early seems to be a component of it. Because people just remember you as young.
We all want to live long,
but James Dean and Marilyn Monroe just weren't that talented.
Something. Come on. I'm not going to go into it with you. We're not discussing dead people talent, but I just had a baby actually in June.
Yeah, which 7 months ago.
Yeah, I know. It made me sad. I just had a baby.
All right, let's get you out of this, Kara.
Get me out of this. Okay, let's talk about
corruption.
Let's talk about the president actually threatening a representative of Congress in this weird tweet, which, of course, he always tries to draw the line, but this is such an implicit threat as the impeachment trial was going on. Trump tweeted on Sunday that Representative Adam Schiff is a, quote, corrupt politician, that's all in caps, and probably a very sick man. He has not paid the price, comma, yet, for what he has done to our country. Which was, I don't know, it just seemed to like be a whistle call for all the crazies out there to do something about it. And Jack Dorsey put it on his list. On Meet the Press, the congressman said he believed it was a threat. I'm with the congressman on this.
Yeah.
And then, of course, John Bolton, when it looks like he's probably like the GOP senators are going to use any pretzel logic to not call witnesses, which is it's just astonishing their corruption and toxicity. But when they do that, like Bolton, someone near Bolton's dropped this book, which is like the president's a liar and I was in the room. And that's what the book is called. It's an astonishing situation we're in.
Yeah, John Bolton is like Sofia Coppola in 1992. He's like, let me come to the Oscars. He wants to testify.
Yeah.
I'm like most Americans. I want to pretend to understand what's going on and like I give a shit. The thing that just angers me and it's my fail is all of these quote unquote moderate Republicans pretending to give a good damn and be thoughtful. Well, I don't know. I need to think about witness. It's like they might as well. They're just such incredible whores. They're like, how do I pick up another 11 moderate votes by pretending to give a shit and have any nuance?
Stop insulting whores. Stop it.
Okay, you're right.
Stop it. Let's get to a couple more big stories. This is perfect that I'm sick. Coronavirus in China is now spreading across the world, including the United States. Over 2,000 people have been found to have it in China. At least 80 people have died. 5 cases in the U.S., 2 in California, 1 in each in Washington, Illinois, and Arizona. The virus appears to have originated in
the Swisher household.
Seafood, a wholesale market in Wuhan.
I'm on to something. I'm playing house. Do you have a bunch of dead chickens lying around anywhere
in
Brooklyn?
No, this is about bats, I think. Anyway, south of Beijing, Americans in Wuhan have been evacuated to San Francisco. This is so much news. Residents of the province where Wuhan is located have been barred from Hong Kong until further notice. China, the most crackdown country, cannot crack down on this, as happens with these viruses, because people move around, has banned wildlife trade nationwide until the epidemic passes. The ordeal has reinvigorated skepticism around Chinese meat markets, where this and SARS is expected originated. 2 of Hong Kong's biggest attractions, the Disneyland and Ocean Park, were closed. I have been to Ocean Park. Scott,
what's that like? That's a water park?
It's like a Disneyland there. It's wonderful. My son forced me there, but it's weird and interesting. And
I know the Swisher is like amusement parks, which doesn't fit
Swisher
at all.
Swisher doesn't. Swisher goes with Alex. Swisher likes him because I'm a good mom. It was Lunar New Year over the weekend, which is China's biggest tourist season. So this is just it started on Weibo, this government action. After Weibo, where people were doing this 45 million views on a popular social media, reject game meat. That's what's going on here.
Yeah.
So thoughts? They can't really censor it. They don't. Right. People know. People are dying.
Right. Well, I generally think. A few things here. One, I think that there's good reminders, including this one, that we shouldn't take for granted the government and things like the CDC and the FDA that regulation works, and that when you have a disregard for regulation around health and food and proximity of people to livestock, you know, bad things happen. And mainland China over-indexes on this stuff, right? Whenever we want to find some scary antidote or whatever it is, we go to get the flu shot, we go into these regions. I personally think this stuff is wildly overhyped. I think it's important there's public education, but I think this is much more spectacle than it is historic. And I hate to say that for fear that it does turn into something, but I almost feel as if it's a, you know, I get it. It's dangerous. The CDC will do a great job. Public needs to be aware of it. But I generally think this stuff ends up usually being a head
usually
fake.
Until the one.
It's a fair point.
You know, my ex was working for President Obama during the Ebola crisis, and I remember they couldn't say anything about it, but suddenly she knew a lot about Ebola. I see, I'm obsessed with plagues. I know all about plagues, all of them.
Really?
And I feel like this is what's going to take down.
What's your favorite plague?
Well, the bubonic, really. You've got to go with that one. But these things are going to take over the world in ways that I think people. But what's interesting is social media does have an impact. People are aware of them, even if there's rumors going up and down. It makes people aware instantly of these things. But, you know, taking care of these things are really problematic. And, of course, you need to have an administration, a U.S. administration especially, who actually has science advisors. So it's we're kind of not in a great – I'm sure he doesn't even know what's going on. And I'm hoping the government is just self-medicating and doing it themselves.
It's really interesting, though, because – or I think it's interesting. If you had taken the infectious nature of Ebola with the latents of HIV, you'd effectively have the end of the world.
Yeah.
The best or the most fortunate attribute about Ebola was that people were dead or very sick very soon, so they were easy to identify.
Yeah.
But if you'd had – if Ebola had had, say, a 3 or 5 year dormancy period, it would have gone everywhere because you wouldn't have known. So there's – these things are very interesting and very –
You know, you and I will have dinner and I will talk of plagues with you.
Well, that sounds like a – how about a bucket of chicken and we watch the Super Bowl?
It's a great challenge of this world, the way we move – I'm telling you.
You think plagues in proximity?
I've watched every plague movie. Even the one with Dustin Hoffman.
And is it our species self-correcting because of overpopulation? I mean, there's a reason for these things. They actually supposedly play a role in the progress of the species.
Yes, they do. They do. Like everything. It's like fire. Yeah, but still, it's not the way you want. You don't have to, you know. Yes. Yeah, so anyway, last very quick story. Casey Newton had another scoop that was about his YouTube moderator story. Something that you and I have talked about, they're being forced to sign waivers acknowledging that the job can give them PTSD so that these companies are protected. These Accenture, which operates the moderation site for YouTube, distributed the document to workers 4 days after Casey published these. They know. These companies measure everything.
Why does that bother you? Or why does that surprise you, I guess I should say?
Because they should there's going to be – let me just say, there's going to be – how much they know about what the traumatization of their moderators or the depression among teens or the addiction stuff, how many people they have working on these topics is going to come out, the details of how much they know and do it anyway. I think it's very legally problematic for them, no matter how many things they make people sign. Thank you.
Yep, 100% agree. It's not surprising. Anytime you go to work in any situation, the first thing that your employer is going to do is try and figure out a way to cover their ass.
In this case, they know the impact. They know the damage. I think this is something that they're aware of, and they're protecting themselves, obviously legally, which would make sense. But they have psychologists in there. They have sociologists in those companies. You know, I think Tristan Harris gave us a little sense of that. They know exactly the impact.
I think the mental health
stuff that you talk about.
Yeah.
That they are very aware of what this way before we all have become. Of the impact of these things, and they'll say they didn't mean it and apologize and say sorry.
The issue isn't legal disclosure around moderators. The issue is why do they need moderators and why can't they have policies such that we eliminate a lot of this or people just can't see it. I just don't. Why wouldn't they if they spend a fraction of the money on moderation? On technologies or policies to kick people off, including those who threaten other public officials. And maybe even, I don't know, move to a different business model, call me crazy, and ask everyone to spend $1 a month on these platforms. But this is, I agree.
The problem is much more early. I agree with you.
It's built into the business. So rather than hiring moderators, they just need to fundamentally change their business model and the incentives. Yes. And I'm now convinced that until a big executive shows up in an orange jumpsuit, nothing's going to happen.
Or a big executive hands us some documents that we need to look at. that say a lot of this. That's what we need.
It sounds ominous with your raspy voice.
I know that. Documents. There you go.
There you go.
Anyway, aren't you glad to have me back? You missed me, didn't you?
I do, but I always miss you.
Yeah,
I always miss you because I'm a bit of a masochist.
I was supposed to call you this weekend, but I sounded literally like, hi, how you doing? Scott, it's time for a quick break. We'll be right back with listener mail, wins and fails, and a new segment with Silicon Valley Insider and author of a new and super popular and very funny newsletter called Pop Culture Monday, Brooke Hammerlin.
Support for Pivot comes from the Optimistic Outlook podcast. What can a microgrid on Chicago's South Side teach us about the future of energy? How can we fight to make clean air a basic human right? And why are there almost a million open manufacturing jobs right now? There's only a few people in the world with the expertise, access, and perspective to give real answers to those questions. And Barbara Humpton, the CEO of Siemens USA, is one of them. On her podcast, The Optimistic Outlook, you get a seat at the table with Barbara as she shares the latest insights on breakthroughs in manufacturing technologies that are reshaping our reality. Barbara's guests include thought leaders, industry mavericks, and researchers who all share actionable information and ideas about the technologies that are creating our future. Recent episodes highlight how new technology paired with sustainability efforts has radically changed workplaces across the spectrum, from hospitals and energy plants to transportation systems. Other fascinating topics include sustainable beer brewing, the power of 3D printing, and the incredible potential of self-healing concrete. To learn more, join the dozens and dozens of people who tune into this podcast. Listen to The Optimistic Outlook wherever you consume your podcasts.
Support for Pivot comes from Pendo. Think about some experiences you've had where your review was nice enough. That restaurant down the street you heard was great, nice enough. That boutique hotel you were so excited to try? Oh, nice enough, I guess. Not exactly ringing endorsements. And these days, if your brand's app experience is just nice enough, chances are you won't be keeping your users engaged the way you want to. Pendo improves the apps your customers and employees rely on. Whether you're building applications for customers or managing applications for employees, Pendo can help deliver better experiences for your users so they can get more value from your software. Pendo can also help you get answers to critical questions about how users are engaging with your app. Then turn those insights into action, all in one easy-to-use platform. Visit pendo.io/pivot to learn more about how your team can use Pendo to start building better digital experiences. There, you can also check out Pendo's lineup of free certification courses, 12 hours of in-depth training for your product management teams on topics from AI to product analytics to product-led growth. That's pendo.io/pivot to learn more.
And now let's do some listener mail.
You've got. I can't believe I'm going to be a mailman.
You've got mail.
Hey, this is Rebecca Sinanis. I produce this show. You might know me from the credits, but here's today's listener mail. It comes from Kyle Ladwig, and he wants to know, after the WeWork debacle, what's up with the other co-working startups like Industrious, Convene, UCommune, Breather, and The Wing? Has the WeWork story tainted the whole category? Are the subtle differences in customer segments and lease structures enough to make the co-working business work? And mostly, what would you do if you were leading marketing for these co-working startups? Run away from the fire or charge through the flames to grab market share? Thanks, Kyle.
By the way, last week, WeWork sold its share in The Wing. They did that before that. I happen to know about that. As part of an effort to narrow itself. Core business also, I think The Wing wanted away from those people. Anyway, they sold part of that stake to Google Ventures, which I think The Wing is thrilled about. So what do you think? What do you think the differences are? This is an area you know well.
First off, they don't have the same capital complexion. I don't know much about the space other than I took on too much office space, and I'm now Adam Neumann minus the charm and $2.7 billion. I'm trying to lease out desks.
Also hair.
And so I can speak to the softness of the commercial real estate market firsthand in Soho. But anyways, the Knotel takes a different approach. Knotel was doing what WeWork was doing, and that is they go to a company and say, all right, here's a schedule or a sliding scale of flexibility. Do you want a one-year lease, a two-year lease, a three-year lease? Do you want sort of lame, sort of cool, ridiculously hip furnishings? Do you want modest tech, good tech, cutting-edge tech? And they create almost like a buffet menu and do it all for you and charge, you know, a decent premium. And it's actually a pretty good business model. And I think that their capital kind of capital allocation strategy isn't just ridiculously drunk. So I think those things have, they have much more, I don't know, they're likely much more viable. The problem is they still have an enormously drunk competitor that's overfunded, and the space has been overfunded, which is going to hurt everybody. But everybody is doing exactly what they should be doing, and that is they're focusing on a specific niche, and they're coming up from below. They're saying, all right, the Wing was different. The Wing had a niche, right? And it sent a very strong signal about what it was. WeWork's strategy was just to basically overwhelm the market with capital and drive down returns and just make a bunch of stupid
decisions.
I call
that spray and pray.
There you go. Mm-hmm. So I think that I'm hopeful for the other guys. WeWork, you know, you always want to think everyone's all evil. That's not true. WeWork did evolve the co-working space. There are a lot of entrepreneurs that want to get out of the house, that want, you know, flexibility.
It's a good product. We never thought product wasn't good.
Yeah.
Irritating in many ways when I was there. But the Wing, I think, is different. I do want to. I'm thinking of actually joining the Wing and paying money if I use it a lot. I don't.
Yeah, that's called being a consumer, Kara.
In any case, what do you think is going to happen? I think these are going to be smallish businesses. That's what I think. Smallish, local,
that's right.
Maybe a couple of cities.
And they'll be valued at 0.1 to 1 times revenues.
Yeah.
And the VCs and the founders are going to have to wake up from their consensual hallucination that these were tech companies that warranted tech valuations. They're interesting real estate. Most great real estate companies are built over decades. Take slow, thoughtful, property-by-property decisions, great management. There's a lot of friction in the business, but the thing about real estate is there's a lot of friction on the way up, but there's a lot of friction on the way down, and that is the wealthiest people in America come from two cohorts. They're either entrepreneurs or they own real estate. And real estate, just the cash flow, the passive income, I always say to kids, the way to know you're rich is to have passive income greater than your burn. And one of the ways that really wealthy families create passive income for future generations is, quite frankly, the real estate ownership. So these are businesses that are more like iconic dynasty businesses. The thought that you could scale it up and get a weird valuation, that's not going to happen. But I'm hopeful for the other guys. We'll see.
You know, the Wing has daycare there. It's really nice.
They didn't. Well, Equinox just opened up a co-sharing, co-working place. Everyone decided to kind of jump in.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I think it's what they have that differentiates them, like the daycare. I'll go there.
Focus.
The daycare.
Niche. Yeah.
Niche.
Focus
niche.
On something. Yeah.
It'll be a niche. In any case, we'll see how it continues to, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they clean up the WeWork situation. I mean, I don't think it's not going to be there. You're right. I don't think it's going to be.
It's not, you know, the reality is it's not that interesting a space. The only reason it's interesting, oh, and by the way, I'm plugging, I'm doing a listening party tonight, the Wondery, I don't know what you call it. Mini series on WeWork is coming out tonight, which the dog plays a central role.
Of course,
that's right. That's right. And by the way, these listening parties, Kara.
Yeah.
You put on iPads at the Soho House. You know, it's very pretentious. Speaking of clubs.
Yeah.
And you put on eye patches or eye things, and you just listen for the full experience.
Oh no, really? A room full?
Isn't that cool?
You didn't mention me once,
cool.
did you? In this whole thing, you just took credit for the whole thing, didn't you?
No, I have a shirt that says it's her. It's all. I owe everything.
Yeah, okay, whatever.
I owe everything to this one.
I've taken down enough companies.
Yeah, 30 years working my ass off, and you discovered me overnight. Thanks very much.
You know what? Just
Rebecca Sinanis is the reason I'm here. All right.
Anyway,
thank you, Kara.
Wins and fails. Would you like to start? I can start. Giant Bezos house party in D.C. that was attended by everyone from Ivanka Trump.
That was a win? That sounded like
know.
Fun.
I don't know what it
Why
is.
Didn't
I was not
the
invited.
Dog go?
Here's a fail. I was not invited to Jeff Bezos' giant house party. Thank you.
But why does anybody care? And I don't. What's the problem with that? I believe in the right of free assembly.
I think it's fine.
If a 54-year-old wants to have
a party,
that's fine.
He built a beautiful, beautiful house. I think it was like an old museum. I can't remember. It's huge. It's near my ex's house. It's in Calarim. It's not. Ivanka Trump could have walked. She lives nearby.
Well, this is the thing I don't get, and it stuck out to me.
Huh?
Yeah, 11 bedrooms, 25 bathrooms. Does he have an abnormally small prostate or bladder? What's going on here?
It's for entertainment.
Does he literally need to pee every 7 steps? He's like, all right, disrupt the world, avoid taxes. I got to pee.
There's
25 bathrooms.
Entertainment. It's
in
huge.
11
His
bedrooms.
Property is huge. If you walk by it, I walk the dogs by it, I make them pee around
the area.
Well,
it's the old textile museum or something. It's nice when billionaires buy public institutions and museums. I think that shows the progress of our society.
It's for exactly this party. That's what it's for. For his Washington presence, the Washington Post will probably do things there. He will never live there. Maybe he'll stay there. It's a hotel. It's huge. It's huge. It's huge and rather big. And they've been
Jamie Dimon was there. I Do you know, I thought of this, I'm going on a tangent. Jamie Dimon, there was a lot of controversy. He made $33 million last year.
Mm-hmm.
And what struck me is he advised, he's pretty much the personal banker and advisor to Adam Neumann, including creating a stalking horse of a debt rescue package, which he was paid a $50 million fee, regardless of whether it was
money,
a success or not.
Yeah,
he made $33 million, and it struck me that any guy who is the top advisor to a guy who managed to get $2.7 billion commission in exchange for losing 17, who makes $33 million, is underpaid. So Jamie Dimon, in my
view,
is the most underpaid executive in America right now.
Yeah, I know, but whatever. All right.
Bezos home. How big's the garage, Kara?
I don't even know if there's a garage. It's a big house.
All right.
What's a big house?
Good stuff. Oh,
what's your win and fail, sir?
Oh, my win. Okay, so my win, and this is a bit, you need to give me some running room here.
All right,
so
okay, here we go.
Everyone's going to be talking about the incredible loss.
We've got to get to Brooke at some point this decade, but go ahead.
There we go. Everyone's going to be talking about the loss of sport because of Kobe Bryant, but the academic world, and specifically the world of strategy, lost an icon.
Oh, this is good.
Last week, Clayton Christensen, Professor Christensen, Rhodes Scholar, spent 2 years in South Korea on mission and pioneered this notion of disruptive innovation. And up until that point, innovation was seen as, one, largely the domain of big companies that had the capital to invest, and two, were a function of big macro factors, you know, the steam engine coming along or the processor. And he coined the term disruptive innovation, and that was the notion that, one, it wasn't macro, that companies actually could make decisions that were the driving factors in creating innovation, disruption was a function of how poor the incumbents were. And I talk about this a lot, and that is the innovator's dilemma, which everyone says, but most people don't understand what it means, and that is companies have such a vested interest in protecting their legacy assets that they're somewhat loath to innovate. And then a small company comes in, and even at the fringes, says, you know, I'm not going to go after all of e-commerce. I'm not going after Sears or Walmart. I'm just going to go after books. And the incumbents ignore them. We're not going to go after movies. We're not going to go after original scripted TV shows. We're just going to ship people cute little CDs in the mail. And everybody ignores them because they're tiny and they're not a threat. Oh, we're Luxottica. We're not worried about that cute little company that sends 5 pairs of glasses to your home for that ridiculously cheap price of $99. And they start biting at your ankle, and then you wake up, and they're such incredible value proposition. They're so nimble. They're so hungry. They're so unafraid. They have so few legacy assets that inhibit or hamstring their decisions. You wake up, and you no longer have a little poodle at your ankle. A great white shark has you halfway up, you know, and it's your torso is halfway in this great white shark. So he brought up this, he pioneered the world of disruptive innovation and is probably the most influential academic over the last 20 years.
Everybody was. And also, he pioneered the good internet and stuff like that, the good innovator.
100%.
He was such a decent man.
And he had an influence on me tactically or professionally and from a content standpoint, in that, one, in business school, you're not supposed to bring personal stuff. It's about business.
Mm-hmm.
And he was really one of the first academics to taxonomize life lessons in business strategy. And he talked about the notion that you had to invest early and often in your relationship with your family, or you would end up bankrupt as a person, regardless of your success. He said that he talked a lot about not judging your success by the accolades you receive, but your ability to put yourself in a position to improve other people's lives. And I started about 5 or 7 years ago talking about the difference between success and happiness in my class, in large part because Professor Christensen gave academics license to talk about personal values in the context of business. He was a very decent man, wrote an iconic book called How You Measure Your Life, that talked a lot about this. But anyways, this is a giant. He melded business and character. Gone at 67. He was actually quite ill. And what was weird is 10 years ago, he unknowingly launched my speaking career. I started getting calls from his agency to come speak about innovation. And I got 6 calls in 3 weeks. And I'd had maybe 2 calls before that in a year. And they said, Clay's sick. So they're like, get that crazy guy from NYU.
Oh, wow.
But he got ill about 8 or 10 years ago. He had a stroke. Anyways, he was just an enormously influential person, a very good person, not only in blended academia with lessons on personal character. So Clayton Christensen, gone at 67, but just a lion of a man and a huge positive influence on academia in the world.
I agree with you. I'm going to be writing my Times column on him tomorrow.
Really?
Yes,
on Clay?
Indeed, of course. How could I not? He had so much impact on all the major figures and in a good way. But they need him around right now. But unfortunately, he got sick when he needed to be there to talk about these issues. You know, there's Tom Peters. There's a bunch of them. But he's the towering influence and impact, I would say, on tech for sure. My fail, I don't know what to think about it. The fail is I'm not even going to mention her name because she's getting mobbed on Twitter. A Washington Post reporter had tweeted something about Kobe Bryant's history around this sexual assault. And I think she got suspended because she put an email. She got so attacked for just even mentioning it. It was ill-timed. It was an ill-timed tweet. But because it was right after and, people were mourning and then people went crazy on her. But she also put up emails of people who were attacking her, which I think she showed or their identities and stuff like that. So she was suspended at the Washington Post. But this whole issue of cancel culture, I don't know if saw Megyn Kelly and Bill Maher talked about it this weekend, was super in the news. And it's something I want to talk about next week a little bit because I think you talk about it a lot. I have different thoughts on it. But it certainly was apparent, things you cannot say. But that's like, honestly, when someone dies or in some horrible, tragic way, people do have a moment, no matter what they did, don't want you to do that. And so it's being made into this, why people hate the media. Look, that's not really what's happening here. Anyway, I don't know if it's a win or fail, but I do want to think about this idea around cancel culture because when Bill Maher and Megyn Kelly talked about it, everyone attacked them, and it's like, we have to talk about this issue. And at the same time, all these people have enormous platforms. And therefore, when they use them, they get dinged for things they do that are mistakes or whatever. So I'd love to chat about that next week.
So, well, I'm telling you, I'll give you a preview.
Sure.
I think one of the keys to happiness or an algorithm for happiness is to be rich and anonymous because there is the moment you – and I don't have the same level of fame as you, but as I draft off of your cattails, get that? Not your coattails, your cattails. I just thought of that.
You're famous.
Oh, my God, that's good animal humor on the run.
Yeah.
So, but I don't like – I like most of it, but there's definitely a cost.
Yeah.
You definitely see people come after you. You definitely see virtue in going after people who are – I don't want to call famous, but – and the thing about typically what's happened is we've decided that people deserve a moment of we have a bias towards their best attributes when they're no longer around to defend themselves. And I hope that's a decorum we stick with. And when people pass away, we have a tendency to talk about the positive things.
Anyway, I would like to talk about cancel culture with you next week. Next episode.
I got to read up on it.
Okay. It's very – you got to be a pro at tweeting. I have warned so many well-known people. I'm like, you need to be a pro at this.
Yeah, but I've stopped – you used to be my role model on Twitter in the sense that I love how you clap back in people's faces. They say stupid thing and you'll just like get back in their face. I've stopped responding to negative tweets and occasionally I just like them because I find it just pisses me off. I don't want to think about it.
Really?
I don't want to give them any oxygen.
I enjoy it.
I don't
want
to validate it.
I cackle while I do things. My favorite new one is Thanks, Dad. Thanks, Dad. Okay, Scott, we're going to try something new that I know you'll like. We're calling it the Pop Culture Pickup. We have my good friend Brooke Hammerling on the line. She's been writing a very popular weekly pop culture roundup on Medium. All right. Hi, Brooke.
Hi, guys. Can you hear me?
Oh, you have a good radio voice, Brooke Hammerling.
You do have a good radio voice.
Not the first time I've heard that. I'm just going to keep getting into it.
So you have a podcast.
We're looking for a co-host.
No, we're not. You know, Scott, don't try to keep me on edge because I will cut you. Let me just say, in any case, popular weekly.
Me?
Yeah, I will. Everybody.
Do you know how insecure in this relationship I am?
Yes, I know.
I am literally putting on makeup and short skirts every night for you when you come home.
Here we are. All right. Well, Scott needs help. So what are the big
moments? Yeah, I mean, you guys talked a lot about pop culture. I mean, believe it or not, it sort of incorporates into everything we do. And obviously the tragedy of Kobe and all of that. But it also was timed with the Grammys last night. Everybody sort of was on edge to see how they were going to cover it. And a lot of people actually thought the Grammys should be canceled. But it was hosted by Alicia Keys.
Give us some background music. Hold on while I talk. Because let me be honest with y'all. It's been a hell of a week. Damn.
The social universe has I think, anointed Alicia Keys the host of everything. I think that's sort of like what 2020 is Alicia Keys is going to host every award show. And the Grammys were really big. You know, Billie Eilish swept the Grammys. I don't know if you guys know who last was the artist to sweep that way, all four major.
Helen Reddy.
What?
I don't even know who that is.
Helen Reddy.
I feel though. Iron Woman, hear me roll.
Oh yeah, of course. Sorry.
To ignore.
No, but the artist is somebody that I think Scott.
That's your theme song.
That shit is money. Brooke, you need new cultural
I know, letters. Seriously.
Yeah, you need to have old people.
I guess. Well, do you remember the song Sailing?
Yes.
Christopher Crossan, who I booked for my 2000
Sailing.
Party at the Top of the Rock.
Exactly.
What?
He was the last person to sweep the Grammys in 1981.
Oh, that was a good song.
Oh, that's an awesome one. Another question. Come on, keep it going.
Okay, well, you guys, I know that Scott knows this because you partook in it. The crazy meme that took over.
Marijuana. No, wait. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Edibles.
I mean, drugs may have been a part of it, but the meme that took over everybody this week was the one where you posted pictures of yourself and your Facebook and Instagram, LinkedIn, and Tinder.
Right.
And Scott, I saw your Tinder photo, which I'm sure a lot of people would have not swiped on because it was Jeff Bezos.
Okay.
But that
Brooke,
that was.
Do we know each other well enough that you mock me like that? That's Kara. That's
I'm
friendship with
Jeff,
Kara rubbing
Jeff
off on
Bezos,
you.
Jeff Bezos,
right.
Not you. I think it was Jeff Bezos in that snazzy Indian jacket.
I am desperate for affirmation. What did you think of? I don't even know what you call that, but
I did it.
So
it's called the Dolly Parton Challenge, and it's
Dolly
because
DP Challenge, DPC. DP means something else to me, but I'll go with that. DPC.
Dolly put it up. She
I
posted
love Dolly
these four pictures
so
of herself,
much.
And it was actually this sort of call to action of feminism, where she told men to go, or whoever, told people to go and find themselves a woman that could be all four of those photos that she put. And one was the vixen, and one was the brilliant business woman and so forth. So that took over, and everybody took their own take on the Dolly Parton Challenge, including dogs. So that was big.
So Brooke, have you done one?
You know what? I almost had my dog Potato do one, but I refrained after another meme came out this past week with the dude holding a sign, and he was holding a sign saying, "Your dog does not need its own Instagram." And I was very hurt by that. I do have
Potato
one last question, though.
Brooke's
but
dog,
is
who's
there,
more famous than either of us, really, on the internet.
I just want to bring it back to, it wasn't this past week, but it was a couple weeks ago, and it was a huge iconic moment in pop culture. But do you know which celebrity released a candle that smells like her vagina? Maybe I can give you a four. It was between Martha Stewart or Gwyneth Paltrow or Meghan Markle or, I don't know, Oprah Winfrey.
Well, I thought it was someone else.
Oh, my God.
That's an easy one.
Whose was it?
Gwyneth Paltrow, obviously.
I'm embarrassed to know that.
Gwyneth
well, first
Paltrow.
Off, I was going to say, I thought it was Chrissy Teigen, but wasn't it,
oh, it
doesn't
it,
been. Isn't it the whole goop
it
thing?
Was Gwyneth
goop,
Paltrow,
yes, Gwyneth
yeah.
Paltrow.
And apparently Paltrow, her candle smells delightful.
Oh, my God.
That God.
That was.
This is one of those moments where I just say to myself, don't say anything. Don't say anything.
I got
don't
you one for
anything.
Your birthday, Scott. How sad.
Brooke, where can we find more of your
more
work?
Of your
if
work.
You think, wow, this stuff's cool, where do we go?
I mean,
go?
Follow me on Medium. I'm doing it on Medium because they give me the opportunity to edit throughout the day, and I make a lot of mistakes, so I have to be able to edit.
Medium.
Yeah, it's great. And watch it because they're helping me figure out my product a little bit better. It's great.
Yeah. Newsletters are a really interesting business. Maybe we'll talk about that next week, Scott. Anyway, Scott, always a pleasure. We'll be back.
Yeah, Kara, get better.
Thursday.
By the way, disruptive innovation, urgent care.
Yeah.
The healthcare industry is ignoring urgent care. It's cheap. It's going after
a
small and attractive part of the market.
CityMD in New York, it was fantastic.
They do a great job,
Great job. I found out I did not have strep. Great. I felt much better after going. It was an amazing experience. We will talk about it next week, too.
Yeah. I'm glad you're feeling better. You should definitely do that Dolly Parton Challenge thing.
It's the exact same photo of me with my arms crossed and my
sunglasses.
Well,
even that's funny, but you should do it.
Be part of
pop culture. End up on the Medium blog.
I may
blog,
do all
the
Scott
Brooke
Galloway
writes.
Pictures. Anyway, we'll be back.
I already did mine. It's really good.
All right. I'm going to look at it. I'm going to do mine today. Okay, because I'll be super late, like the ice bucket challenge. Anyway, we'll be back on Friday to talk about a lot of stuff, including predictions. And there are tech earnings, so much to discuss.
Yeah, good stuff. So just a quick note. The guy we had on last week to talk about racism in Hollywood, what was his name?
Franklin Leonard.
Franklin Leonard. Anyways, my point was it needs to start earlier, and then we need to admit more
people
of color in film school to start to attack the problem. And he immediately updated my thinking, corrected me, whatever you want to call it on Twitter. He said, there's actually just as many women in film school as men, so that doesn't explain it.
It doesn't explain it.
Anyways, I just wanted to shout out that I obviously got that wrong, and I appreciate that he corrected me with data, but clearly there's
more than that. We're hoping to have him at Code talking about data around movies and stuff like that. It's going to be really great. He's a great guy. You'll love him. He's a really smart guy. But Scott, that's really nice that you said you had something to learn. You're a learning organism. Anyway,
I'm a sponge.
You're a sponge.
I'm a sponge.
Remember, we love your questions. If you have a question about a story you're hearing in the news, email us at pivot@voxmedia.com to be featured on the show. Today's show was produced by Rebecca Sinanis. Eric Anderson is Pivot's executive producer. Thanks also to Rebecca Castro and Drew Burrows. Make sure you subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts. If you're an Android user, check us out on Spotify or, frankly, wherever you listen to podcasts. If you liked our show, please recommend it to, actually, two friends. Thanks for listening to Pivot from Vox Media. We'll be back next week with another breakdown of all things tech and business.
Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously. Hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right, $25 a month, every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.